Appreciate the kind introduction. Also appreciate the previous two speakers. My presentation is going to be a little bit of time to reflect. I'm not going to have any clear answers for you. Data are going to be critical, so that's what's going to be the main theme for my presentation. And having listened to the previous speakers, maybe we should just enjoy the nice weather here in Long Beach and leave the room. And I think this is actually one of the few rooms which is as a window. So don't dream too much. Or close your eyes and listen to what I say, if I can stay in encouraging you. So what is the crop model? I think we might have some people already very familiar with it, but we might have some other people in the room who are mainly geared towards crop hydrologic models. Our goal of these crop models is really to integrate the state of the science in a range of different disciplines within the agronomic community into very sophisticated mathematical equations. Now, if we have really done that over time, that's a big question, but that really is our goal. Many have seen if this is before. I'm not going to show you any much equations, but our model right here is a black box. Requires a set of input data, similar to what was said earlier in the presentations by the other speakers. Basically, with the crop simulation models, we're very strong in simulating development, both vegetative development, reproductive development. We look at growth, and at the end, we're trying to predict yield. But also, we're trying to go beyond yield, especially if we're looking at on-farm applications. We're looking at economics, net income, looking at resource use with respect to water, and also looking at pollution, especially with respect to nitrogen leaching. Now, as was said in the introduction, I'm somewhat associated with the DSET community, and as such, I get some interesting questions. Here's number one I received during the last couple of weeks. Can we use the DSET model for looking at water logging? And what do I have to do to actually modify the code? And the person of this email actually included a very nice picture. I don't think he made it. He borrowed it from the news community to demonstrate a point. This question came 2 days ago. I need to run county level simulations. No further details. Can we do that with details? With DSET. One yesterday. Again, similar to the presentation with the hydrologic models, these models are used extensively for climate change applications. So this person wants to have the source code in order to run the DSET models. So when we look at this, the crop simulation models are used at quite a range of scales, from looking all the way possibly even precision agriculture to looking at spatial variability within the field, all the way up to the country level or even regional level types of predictions, looking at in-season versus very long-season predictions as well. So with that, we need to address a range of questions. So the most critical one really to me is then the input data that are available to run these simulation models. And then also, as again was mentioned in the previous presentation, make sure that whatever we do, we evaluate these models with observed data to make sure that the outputs are critical. So some of you have seen this slide slightly modified in the introduction to DSET. So we have a concept of minimum data with respect to what type of data are required to run the models, which provide reasonable answers, and also we want to look at be able to collect the data relatively easy on the field conditions, or when we now start looking at large-scale simulations, output of GCMs, preferably at a daily time step. So depending on the models we work with, each of you probably have a different time step, but at the end, again, it's very nicely was presented in the previous presentation, we want to make sure that whatever we predict, we get it for the right reasons and not for the wrong reasons, which is a huge challenge. Now, the biggie here when we talk about ET is weather data. Now, most of you are familiar with what we're looking at here. This is a cotton shelter, which is being used to measure temperature by our federal government. Now, this one is in place when I joined the University of Georgia quite a few years ago. After some nagging, it was actually replaced with the one on the left, which was good. So many of our crop modelers are using this resource, which is actually the cooperative database for our long-term simulations, especially when we talk about 30, 40 years of historical data, because this is all that is available. This is good. About 4 years ago, I moved to the big city of Prosser in the state of Washington. These are the data I was able to retrieve from the National Climatic Data Center for 1925. Looks great. Columns of maximum minimum temperature and rainfall. Is it good? But can we do ET? Now this becomes scary. This is December 2010. And having access to the date is good, but if you look at the columns, it's still handwritten. We're in a digital age, right? And we'd expect at least this type of data would be collected electronically and then transferred to the National Weather Service in an electronic format. That's not the case. And we're still using a lot of this type of data in our crop models. And imagine what errors can come in by recording the data and then transferring it into a digital format. So, I have another hat besides DSAT. I moved to the state of Washington to manage one of the largest automated weather station networks run by Land Grant University. Comes with a very nice budget. We're up to about 155 weather stations located in the state of Washington. Here are the map of the locations. This is where agriculture is dominant, especially irrigated agriculture as well as dryland agriculture. And we're able to come up with very nice, even handheld tools. This was developed by Troy Peters using potentially T for irrigation scheduler by our growers. So this is nice. But then taking one step back towards DSAT, because that's why I'm here, I want to talk about crop models. So one of the strong points of our crop simulation models, we model all these processes, and Dr. Budi is very familiar because he coded most of the equations, looking at photosynthesis, respiration, partitioning, all the way to the nitrogen uptake. And then with respect to the water balance, many of you have seen this before, looking at potential ET, soil evaporation, getting back to transpiration and plant water uptake, and making sure that we have the right balance there as well. So this is all great. Now then, within the DSAT community, we use the famous or infamous Priestley-Taylor equation. We've been criticized for this for a lot, but there are various reasons for that we're doing this, because the IPSNAT models were originally developed for on-farm applications in developing countries where having access to accurate data is a challenge. So the inputs to the Priestley-Taylor equation and our implementation done by Dr. Ritchie, I misspelled temperature here, but it's maximum minimum temperature and daily solar radiation. So you can argue with me, but I officially don't ask the questions. We're going to have to session if it's right or wrong. So some of us have gone further and looked at the ACSE reference ET equation FAO56, which was nicely introduced in the first presentation. Very nice. But ET, these equations require estimates of air temperature, humidity, solar radiation, and wind speed. Very important. Then the second paragraph becomes more scary. So when this information is not available, we have some type of procedures to estimate the missing values. If you think back to data I just showed you from NCDC, data we many of us use in modeling application, all the data they provide us is maximum temperature and precipitation. So everything else is going to be estimated in order to run it into an FAO56 equation. This is not an observation. This is an observation. This is not a criticism. Okay. Then this statement, with respect to ACSN, there's a literal copy of the document. The quality of the data is very important, and I agree wholeheartedly with this. But then this one becomes a little bit more scary. So the purest of you in the room who are into ET have very strict standards on how to observe your weather data with respect to the fetch around the weather station, which is okay if you're looking at the corn fields in Nebraska, that all you grow there is corn and soybean and corn and soybean. If you go to developing countries with smallholder agriculture, it's a challenge. And even in the state of Washington, it's a challenge. This is my last automated weather station, which was done this year, paid for by a grape grower. I can see some of the pictures in the background, the grapes are there. Now we definitely, in this case, were not allowed to install the weather station in the middle of the grape vineyard because it wasn't very representative. So we got some gravel around this weather station. Part of the other background, we can see some land where they were growing potatoes when we were installing the weather station, center pivots. So if we go back to the previous slide, the question is, when we record the data from this station, is this truly representative for FAO56? I don't know. I don't have the answer to it. So what have we done in DSAT? This is the X-Build tool many of you are familiar with. We have allowed to provide for Priestley-Taylor equation as FAO56 for those of you who don't like the Priestley-Taylor equation. And Dr. Budde will follow up with a very nice presentation, but we've done a very nice comparison as well. Jacquard Affen and Ofi was one of my postdocs. Sometimes a very nice simulation by data provided by Dr. Trout, and it's a very nice database for ET analysis for crop growth models. So basically, had a bone ratio installed, and it's a comparison of a cumulative ET using the bone ratio system versus Priestley Taylor and FAO 56. And the Priestley Taylor is somewhat less than FAO 56 on a bone ratio, so it underpredicts. If you look at the soil moisture prediction, this is the full irrigation treatments for four different layers. It doesn't really make much difference the type of calculation we use. If you look at 70% ET, and again, it doesn't make much difference either. They're both pretty close. So again, this is a very nice data set for comparing the two approaches. So in this particular case, the FAO 56 implementation, a DSET model, did slightly better compared to the bone ratio, but if we're looking at the predictions of yield, growth, and biomass, it really didn't make much difference. So, one challenge. Now then, the next one I want to show you is a potential application, which I was faced with when I was still at the University of Georgia, was the mandate by the governor to predict water use up to 2050 within a 6-month period. It was a huge challenge. So how are we going to do that? Again, we luckily had access to the DSET database, used to run the models. But we had hardly any inputs, no weather data. Soil data was represented maybe by 3 profiles per county, and we had water observations, but we didn't have any crop management data from the individual fields. So what you see here is a comparison by month for a particular county. The blue lines is the observations from water use we're able to obtain from these irrigated systems, and the 3 other color bars, yellow, red, and green, represent what we simulated with the models. So here we're not even predicting yield, we're trying to come up with water use basically coming out of ET. So by year, the models did a fairly good job, relatively. I mean, some of you can criticize this, the model did poor, but we just didn't have the input data available to run these simulations. But we had to do projections, so we ran for 88 counties of Georgia for corn and cotton, and peanut and soybean for 66 counties. So whatever we did, these are the type of projections we could provide for the different months. This shows for corn, and this shows the annual predictions for corn, cotton, peanut, and soybean. But this wasn't an academic exercise, okay? It was actually providing input to the legislator for looking at withdrawals. So again, we're using crop simulation models. We're looking at ET predictions. We have very poor data. And they're going to make policy decisions based on the outcomes of these crop simulation models. So what you see here are the projections for the different months for a dry year, an average year, and a wet year. So in this case, we didn't even include climate change projections. We used historical data to project forward to give these recommendations. And these were actually made available on the web as a resource for planning. So this was a mandate 6 months, somewhat scary. So, my summary, yes, ET is very important, but there are many other processes in the crop models which are as important or more important than ET. It all boils down to the quality of the observed data which we have available in order to make this work. So within the system, we provide options for ET. Within the crop, these are crop simulation models. In fact, internally, we're even looking at a more energy balanced approach in collaboration with Bruce Kimball to implement in DSET. But at the end, we still need to be able to be realistic with respect to the expectation, especially if we know that our input data are going to be weak. And at the end, we need to be able to respond to the needs of our stakeholders. The last couple of slides I showed you stakeholders in the state of Georgia. In the earliest slide, I showed you our users in India, China. We also want to use for different range of applications as well. But at the end, I do agree that we need to continue improving even the science of what we have in these models as long as we have good data available. Then last but not least, just make sure that we don't make any math errors. This is a true case which happened in the state of state of Washington this year. Thank you so much.
Okay, we won't leave you so quickly. So we didn't get any question. We need to have some questions for Garrett. Yes, go ahead.
The most limiting part in the input data into our crop models. I mean, I can give you a whole list. I mean, I could start with, sorry, with the weather data, which is really, to me, probably the most important part. But then if we're looking at water-limited conditions, then the soil data become as important. And then we haven't even talked about genetics. We know that the infamous cultivar coefficients of the descent models are somewhat of a challenge. But, I mean, they're further down the road. I mean, to me, truly, probably the weather data are the most important one, because our models are dynamic models. They represent the daily weather conditions. Do you agree with my statement? I mean, you're a crop modeler, so I can turn the question back around.
You talked about the quality of the weather data.
I mean, there's procedures in place once you observe the data to correct your weather data. But to me, getting access to the weather data is probably more of a challenge, and to make sure that your weather stations are representative for the region where you operate. So in the state of Georgia, it was relatively easy because we don't have much changes in terrain. But now looking in the state of Washington, it's a nightmare. We can go within 5 miles, and we have completely different weather conditions. We can't afford to put automated weather stations there. Maybe with nano sensing, and I know the technology is out there, that we maybe can do a better job in looking at the spatial distribution of weather conditions. I mean, I've worked with the hobo sensors, and they're great, but they're not really recognized as a permanent system to record weather data. So, and at the other end, it also goes back to investment. I mean, I get a lot of requests. In fact, in both states, I'd like to have an automated weather station in my field. But okay, great. If you're willing to pay for the expenses, then we'll be glad to work with you. I mean, our current cost for an automated weather station, Campbell Base, is $7,500. And we charge them $1,500 per year for maintenance. And then even the largest producers, the BECs, oh, no, that's too expensive. We can't afford it. But I mean, they can use the whole crop if they make the wrong decision, even based on the weather data.
Okay. Thank you, Gary. Once again, a big applause.